Lucky Strike presents Your Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889, and by WTIC. You'll meet this evening's special guest after these words from Burritt.
Burritt Mutual Savings Bank asks you this question: why should you save? Burritt Mutual Savings Bank will also try to answer. The reasons for savings are almost endless. 1, it can open the door to your new home. 2, it can give you the means to new furniture, a new car, a boat, a vacation. 3, it can help send your children to college. 4, it can give you that glorious feeling of independence and prosperity. Don't ever feel that you have to have large amounts to save. At Burritt, deposits as small as $1 are welcome. Really welcome. Start now and save for all these reasons and perhaps some of your own. If you can't save a lot, save a little. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, where deposits are safe and earn good dividends. Start your account tomorrow.
And now the Golden Age of Radio and your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening. With me once again is radio collector Ed Corcoran. Ed, our guest tonight has certainly a varied background, doesn't he?
Yes, Dick. I'd say perhaps the guiding hand behind many of the great musical shows of the past, including Arturo Toscanini for openers, and then all the popular bands, and then he also did the Hummert shows, and Ed Wynn, Horace Hite, the Hit Parade. You just can't count them all, Dick.
Our guest tonight from New Milford, Connecticut, is Aldo Gisalbert. And Gis, I'm going to call you Gis if I may.
Oh, I wish you would.
Me too.
I really feel as though we're going to be able to cover and, in a sense, document this early era of radio broadcasting. When did you join NBC?
Well, I joined NBC in 1929.
And you stayed with the broadcasting business
right.
How long?
I stayed with the broadcasting business at NBC as a member of the staff of NBC until war was declared. That is the Second World War, not the First. Although I was still alive and active during the First World War, too, gentlemen.
And then you went on a freelance basis.
Then I went on a freelance basis, yes. And I continued to do programs such as Manhattan Merry-Go-Round, Friday on Broadway, and all of the Hummert programs. That is, all the programs owned by Frank Hummert of Blackett Sample and Hummert. And at the same time, doing such shows as March of Time, The Cavalcade of America, This is the Enemy, in both in Spanish and in Portuguese for Latin America.
That's another part of the story that we're going to get to a little later.
That's another part of the story, indeed.
Actually, your career as a producer overshadows your early career with the network as a radio engineer. And I suppose in those early days, every engineer was a pioneer in a way, wasn't he?
Well, I would say yes, indeed, because an engineer at that time, he did everything but sweep the floor. And when I came to NBC, I came as a sound engineer, as a studio engineer. And naturally, I had a good many programs at that time, both musical as well as non-musical programs, dramatic programs, and all dramatic programs in those days all had musical interludes. From there until I finally got to the Toscanini programs. I first started out with the Toscanini programs since I spoke Italian and I could understand the old gentleman and he could understand me. We got along famously. I went on as an engineer. And little by little, I took on the duties of a production engineer as well. So finally, I was enrolled into the production department.
I see. I see how you make the transition then.
So that was in 32.
Now let's talk about perhaps some of those early problems that an engineer might be faced with. One of the things that Ed and I learned about NBC through your recollections, Gis, was that all of the equipment operated on batteries.
Oh, absolutely. So good many people don't realize that. Not only the remote equipment, which is known as NEMO equipment, was operated on batteries, but also all the studio amplifiers operated on batteries. And at NBC, they even at Rockefeller Center, they had huge rooms. Oh, I would say possibly, 40 by 80 in size, two or three of them, filled with batteries. And these batteries were the size that you would expect to find, well, in a submarine, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
We won't put the Edison Company on the spot at the time, but it seems that the boys at NBC at that time, the upper echelons, didn't trust the Electric Light Company. Not only did they have batteries, which could be switched on for radio work, for transmitting of programs, but they could also be switched on for emergency lighting in the studios to keep at least operating. And in addition to that, in the subterranean cellars, they had huge gasoline electric generators that would go on automatically if the lights even flickered.
Gis, were you involved in any of those early trick broadcasts? I guess we might use that term for want of a better one, where a program would originate from an unusual source, for example.
Oh, heavens, yes. One of them in particular that I can recall was with Graham McNamee going to New London, where at New London they were making for the Navy at that time PT boats. And, of course, we were going to put on a show from a PT boat. Well, they gave us a ride. You have never in all your born days experienced the sight of such a ride. They knew that we were going on this thing, and they really gave us the complete works. I think we turned corners sideways at what seemed to us at speeds of 120 miles an hour. I'll guarantee you one thing. Poor Graham hardly said a word. And my fingerprints on that PT boat, if it's still standing in the water,
it's still there,
will never be eradicated.
Then the story of the airplane that almost didn't make it off the ground.
Oh, this was during the World's Fair in Chicago. Wallace Butterworth was the announcer, and on board we had it's Deutsch Battery Company, yes. They proclaimed to make the lightest Deutsch battery made. You know that it was so light that it could be used in a plane, not only in a plane, but also to operate a transmitter. And this broadcast was to come from the transmitter over Lake Michigan, finally to be broadcast on the network. Well, Checkerboard Field in Chicago had two runways going across it. But at the end of the field, there was a fence. And the fence was full of spikes and what have you to keep intruders off the field. Well, we didn't quite clear the fence. We cleared everything but the hind wheel. And that ripped the hind wheel off and a small portion of the elevators at the end. Well, we finally took off. We got our broadcast across. We had to take Mama back home again. So the pilots looked at us. We looked at them. What happens now? We're going over Lake Michigan. We're going to throw every doggone thing overboard.
I bet he didn't
well,
say it quite that way.
Well, all the seats went over. No, he didn't say that. He used a very common word that is used in bars today. So lo and behold, they did. They not only threw then they started to throw the transmitter overboard. Well, they didn't much care about the transmitter since that was made by NBC. But when the batteries started going overboard, well, the gentleman in charge there from Willard Storage Battery Company, he started to protest. Well, he was promptly told that if he didn't get the Dickens out of there, that they would throw him overboard with the batteries. Well, we finally made it back in the field in a nice belly whopper, so to speak. And, of course, they had fire engines and everything else. But fortunately, we made it back. We were wrapped up in blankets and whatnot. I'm bald-headed. I think I lost a good deal of portion of my hair at that time.
Well, Gis, I do want to talk to you about Toscanini, because he played a rather important part in your life, didn't he?
He certainly did. This happened quite some time ago, to say the least. As a matter of fact, in 1936, we were married. The year before that, there was a young lady that came to NBC. She was a hostess. And I took one look at that young lady, and she had a divine figure. And she was a Southerner, and a nice, soft-spoken voice, and a true lady. So lo and behold, one day I found my opportunity. I had a program on the 8th floor, and Miss Fort, at that time, was a hostess. So this was the 8th floor, and I said, Miss Fort, what studio am I in? She looked at me, what is your name? So I gave my name and spelled it out for her. I'll remember that. And she looked down the sheet. Oh, yes, she says, you have the Lowell Thomas program at 8E. I says, thank you, Miss Fort. So I went in. The page boy, who sat at attention like a wooden soldier alongside of her, said, gee, that's funny, Miss Fort. Mr. Gasalva's had that program for years. Well, my opportunity finally did come. Miss Fort, naturally, being a hostess and all the programs being, the big programs being on at night, had to work in the evening and at night. So this was Sunday night, and Sunday night the Toscanini broadcasts were on for General Motors from Carnegie Hall. That was with the Philharmonic, that was before the NBC Symphony. There was an NBC Symphony Orchestra, but it was not assigned to Toscanini at that time, nor to General Motors. So Miss Fort came up and said, Mr. Gasalva, I understand that you have the Toscanini broadcast. I said, yes, I have, Miss Fort. Well, you see, you know, I'm working on Sunday, and I can't come to the broadcast, because the broadcasts, of course, were open to the public at Carnegie Hall. Would it be possible for me to come to rehearsal? Well, Toscanini never even had a son or daughter at a rehearsal, not even his wife. I looked at her for a long time, and I thought, well, you're missing an opportunity to pass this one up, my friend. So I said, Miss Fort, yes, I will pick you up tomorrow morning at 8 at your apartment. We have found out where she lived. And we will have breakfast at the Park Central, and then 9 o'clock prompt rehearsal starts at Carnegie Hall. So as we walk towards Carnegie Hall, I was working through my mind exactly how I'd approach this. So I got hold of Maurice Van Prague. Maurice Van Prague at that time was not only the contractor for the orchestra, but also acting in this capacity as manager of the orchestra. I said, Maurice, this is extremely important. This is Miss Fort. And then I took Maurice to one side. I said, look, I've got to have this young lady in the rehearsal. Well, Gish, you know full well we're not allowed to have anybody in rehearsal in here with Toscanini. I said, Van, do you understand? I said, this is more than important. Yeah, I understand. Okay, follow me. So we put Miss Fort behind the post. Well, when the rehearsal was over, and of course the old man carried on a few antics, he broke several batons, called the orchestra calzolai, which in Italian means shoemakers, just because they pulled a blooper once in a while. All of this, little Miss Fort took in, eyes getting bigger and bigger, and the southern accent getting deeper and deeper. So finally, after the broadcast was over, I introduced her to Mr. Toscanini. Well, he's very myopic, as you probably all know. But he knew something worthwhile to look at, and his eyesight came back to him. So he looked over Miss Fort and said to me in Italian, in a very nice way, that he approved of the makeup of her anatomy. So lo and behold, every Saturday thereafter, for the next 6 months, Miss Fort was at the broadcast. And a year later, we were married. So Toscanini is more or less our household god, because it is through him that I gained a wonderful wife.
That's a delightful story. What about engineering for the Toscanini broadcasts? What sort of a mic setup did you use?
Well, the microphone setup that we used on all Toscanini broadcasts, and not only the broadcast, but also the recordings, was one microphone. There were two microphones there, one for a spare in case one went bad. We had all the time in the world. If we wanted 10 extra hours of rehearsal for a 1 hour's broadcast, we got 10 extra hours of rehearsal. Well, no question about it, no complaint whatsoever. So consequently, we could minutely set up the men in the proper perspective, not only in their musical makeup, in relationship to frequency to one another, but also in the strength of their pulsations to one another. On various different platforms, some closer, some further away, and sometimes they would be changed for different compositions. Let us say that we had a rondino for woodwinds where only a portion of the orchestra was used. That portion of the orchestra would be assembled in its proper perspective for that particular pickup. If we had to have a chorus, the chorus was also placed so that its relationship to the orchestra would act as the accompanying instrument, not vice versa.
Well, we're going to have a first tonight. For the first time, we're going to play a piece of real serious music, a Toscanini recording, which is from your private collection, I understand, the Prometheus Overture, is that correct?
Yes, indeed.
And this is the only recording in existence of this particular...
It's the only one that I know of today, yes.
Well, that is a first, Dick, so why don't we listen to some serious music here tonight.
Thank you.
beautiful Prometheus Overture by Arturo Toscanini and the orchestra, as produced and engineered by our guest tonight, Aldo Gisalbert. And we'll return to Gis's wonderful stories and recollections in just a moment.
This is the Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel, brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. And by 1080 Radio, WTIC, Hartford.
Buying a new car in 1972? If so, bank credit may cost you less. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, we offer low-cost, convenient auto loans. But we can do more than just put you on the road. We help you establish credit with a bank. We give you cash buyer leverage, and above all, you either start or continue a relationship with a large and progressive mutual savings bank. Once your credit is established, you may want to purchase a new home, improve your existing home, or take a personal loan to finance your trip across the country. Whatever your borrowing needs, it will pay you to start doing business with the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Once an established Burritt customer with good credit, you become a preferred Burritt borrower. So don't wait. Come into any office of the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
Our guest tonight is Aldo Gisalbert, who I don't know how many years, I guess about 18 or so, was with NBC in the capacity of both engineer and producer.
Well, 1929 to when war broke out, and of course then I went freelancing, and I produced many programs at NBC, both commercial programs for commercial enterprises, as well as programs for the coordinator of inter-American affairs and the State Department during the Second World War. These were for propaganda purposes.
Well, Gis, you met so many of the great radio performers. You worked with them either as a producer or as an engineer, and two of the greatest radio comedians were Freeman Gosden and Charles Carell, better known as Amos and Andy.
That's right.
How did you come in contact with them?
Well, you see, from time to time, they came out of Chicago normally, but then they would be on the road. And many times they would appear individually or sometimes collectively, sometimes in a troupe, which never appeared on the air, in various different theaters. And then they would come to such centers as New York City. And whenever they would come to New York City, it just happened to be that I was available at the time, I would take over. If someone else was available another time, they would take over. So I wasn't directly assigned to this particular program. Since both of them knew their stuff so doggone well that they didn't need any supervisor to come down from Chicago to be with them. So the local hand could very, very easily work with them. But they were absolutely terrific.
Yeah, there was a kind of a rumor, or call it a legend, that they used to ad-lib all their shows. Is that true from your standpoint, Gary?
No, it isn't. They rehearsed very avidly. They were very punctilious in... No doubt whatsoever that they did make some side remarks that weren't broadcast, that weren't originally on the script. But by and large, they would stick to the context of the show.
You remember those Monday through Friday evenings, Ed, at 7 o'clock?
Yes, I was fortunate enough to be around at that time. And I like everybody else, I was listening to them faithfully. And you'd never schedule anything that would conflict with that particular time schedule.
Ed, let's have an excerpt from the show itself. And what characters are you going to present?
There were three leading characters, of course, Amos, Andy, and the Kingfish. And then, of course, a number of side characters. But they predominated. And let's have an exchange between Andy and the Kingfish.
With Christmas fast approaching, the Kingfish has hit upon a way to raise some quick cash to buy presents. He's decided to sell his old 1928 automobile. Right now, we find Andy and the Kingfish about to make some repairs on the car before taking it down to a used car dealer.
Yeah, this here's some car you got, Kingfish. How much gas does this thing use?
Well, brother Andy, the nearest I've been able to figure, I get about 13 on a gallon.
13 miles on a gallon ain't bad.
Miles? I'm talking about blocks.
Oh, yeah, well, Who are you going to sell this car to, Kingfish?
Sell it? Well, there's a used car dealer in town, Andy, that are going to sell it to.
Which one is that?
He calls himself the Liberal Scotchman. The only one thing about him, before he'll buy the car, he's got to have a smooth-running motor. Mm. And, Andy, we got to work on it and take the knock out of this motor. You better get in the car and start up the motor.
All right.
Yeah, get in there now.
You ready?
Yeah.
Here I go.
That,
ain't it? You got a thing in there, all right. I'll shut it off.
Let me get this monkey wrench here and tighten up something around here. Yeah, get this thing right here. All right, now start it up again.
You ready?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Cut it off. Well, what do you think, Andy?
I think you've got kennel racing in your gas.
Wait a minute. Let me try something else here with this hammer. Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Yeah, start it up again. Cut it off. We was all right till that duck flew in there. Yeah. I got one more idea here, Brother Andy. Hand me that brick right there.
What you gonna do with that, Kingfish?
Well, I'm gonna use this brick for a wedge so it'll close up part of the crack in the cylinder head.
Yeah, that'll hold it till you can get it done right with baling wire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll hold it till we sell it anyway. Start it up again, Andy.
Okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's good. But that ain't gonna last long. That's only temporary. Now, wait a minute. Don't run it no more than you got it, Andy. Cut it off.
Yeah. Yeah,
cut it off there.
Now, what do we do now?
Now, well, we goes down to the Liberal Scotchman. Andy, you hold the door, and I'll drive with one hand to keep the windshield from falling off. I'll stop right here in the middle of this lot. Here's his lot right here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here comes the Liberal Scotchman now.
Yeah. Hello, mister.
How do you do?
Tell me this. Is you the Liberal Scotchman?
What's not? Who else?
We want to sell you this car. It's a 1928 model.
1928? Boys, please. I'm here for business, not to reminisce.
Well, now, tell you what, don't you buy a lot of secondhand cars?
Most of course. I've got used car lots in every state in the Union. New York, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey.
Where else?
There's more.
Well, now tell me this, what would you give us for this car?
My friend, first I would like to hear the motor, how the motor runs.
Yeah, well, we got a smooth running motor.
And I want to hear with my ears no ping and very little fung.
Yeah, well, I'll start up here. Here we go.
That's enough.
How much will you give us for it?
$50 with all the animals.
$50? That ain't nothing.
Well, how much do you want?
$100.
Ha, ha. Silly boy.
You know, Kingfish, you might sell that car to some out-of-town junkyard where they ain't got no public and that would... Hey, wait a minute. Kingfish, look out the window here, quick.
Yeah, what's the matter, Andy? What's the matter?
Look at that. There's a fella climbing in your car out there. It looks like he's gonna steal it.
Holy mackerel. You're right, he's gonna steal it. Andy, look here. You keep watching him out the window while I get on the telephone and call the police.
Okay.
Operator. Oh, I forgot. I got to dial over. Oh, man.
Kingfish, he's trying to get some keys in the ignition.
Oh, operator. The police station. Hurry up, quick.
He's working on it.
Oh, me. Why don't they answer? I could sell that car for $50 to somebody. And all the insurance I got is $200. Wait a minute. $200 insurance. Brother Andy, is the man gone with the car yet?
He got the key in the ignition, but he can't get it going. What must we do?
Go out there and show him how to start. Wait a minute. I'm so nervous here, Andy.
He got it started. He's pulling out.
Good. Bad. $200 insurance.
Oh, there he goes, Kingfish, down the street.
He's
in
gone.
The car. Yeah.
He's gone, huh?
Yeah, there he goes, out of sight.
Wait a minute. Hello? Police station? Oh, hello, Sergeant Smith. This is George Stevens. Yeah, so glad you remembered me. Yeah, I want to report something. You remember that second-hand car I had? somebody done stole the thing. Goodbye.
Hey, what's going on here?
Oh, Andy, I really a happy man. Yippee, yes, sir, I is happy. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-hey.
My, oh, my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine in my way. Zippity-doo-dah,
our guest tonight is Aldo Gisalbert of New Milford, Connecticut, who for some 18 years of his very long and wonderful career was a producer and engineer with NBC, associated with just about every top show, Ed, that has come down the pike. Haven't you found that to be the case?
Yes, especially in the musical field, both popular and classical. I don't think there's a musical personality that our guest hasn't had some connection with during his career, one time or another.
But Gis, you played an historic role, in a sense, in the development of broadcasting. You were there for the premiere broadcast, the official broadcast from Radio City, weren't you?
Well, the official opening of Radio City, of course, Radio City was used almost a year before its official opening. And I say not used entirely. There were studios that were being used occasionally, small studios, while others were being built. And, of course, all programs were then fed directly to 711 Fifth Avenue and redistributed. So no one knew Radio City was actually being used. However, the real, true, and official opening came at a beautiful time. They decided to do something spectacular. And, you know, we're Americans. When we have to do something spectacular, we have to do something spectacular. Everything's been done before, but this has never been done. So they decided to take the combined orchestras, the New York Philharmonic, every single available man on NBC, which was a symphony and all classical men, as well as the Chicago Symphony and the Detroit Symphony. Now, there were over 400 men in this orchestra. There were 36 basses. One would look over and there would be a forest of bull fiddles, man sawing them in half. Other place he would look and over umpteen number of timpanis and all glockenspiels and chimes and every conceivable kind of percussion instrument. Violins, to say the least, there were 170-some-odd violins. It was a fantastic exhibition. Well, they decided to do the Brook Violin Concerto. Osip Gabrilovich, who is now since long dead, but one of the sweetest and gentlest souls that ever walked in a pair of shoes, was the conductor, the first conductor. Mr. Stock was also a conductor. And we did this with Henri Nosco. Henri Nosco at that time was the first violinist and the concertmeister of the NBC Symphony Orchestra. This was picked up on one microphone, gentlemen, in Studio 8H. Through this, we also found that Studio 8H, as beautiful as it was, as acoustically right as it was also inadequate, not for a size. Nothing would be inadequate for a 400 pieces or over, but even for an orchestra of 70 or 100 men. The the platforms would come out from the wall, extend out at various different levels. However, they were far too wide and not deep enough. So when the NBC Symphony Orchestra and Toscanini was brought to Studio 8H much later, several years later to say the least, Studio 8H had to be redesigned. Platforms had to be made. And by that time also, the acoustical treated paint that was used had plugged up some of the holes and had become hardened. And the whole blinking shoot match had to be scraped and redone.
Guess you were associated with the Ed Wynn Show. We could go on with list after list of programs, but the Ed Wynn Show does come to mind with... Ed, who was the announcer on the Ed Wynn Show?
Graham McNamee.
That's right. In what capacity did you work with Ed Wynn?
Well, I worked both in the capacity of engineer, and then when I transferred over, also as producer.
Ed, do you think you might recreate that one for us?
Yeah, this is a very rare show, but I do have a copy which goes back to that period. I'm not sure whether it originated in the studio or the Hippodrome.
Doesn't make a bit of difference.
It's still Ed Wynn.
For speed, power, action, Texaco Fire Chief, the gasoline that's bought by more tourists than any other brand. For a sweeter running engine, crack-proof Texaco, the motor oil that lasts longer and saves you money. Texaco service stations and dealers in all our 48 states present for your entertainment Eddie Duchin and his music. Graham McNamee. And Ed Wynn, the Fire Chief.
I'm the chief, Graham. Tonight the program's going to be different. Well, Chief, tell me, how are things down on the farm?
Graham, I'm experimenting on the farm with my pet.
You are?
I'm experimenting.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to cross a chicken with a stopwatch.
What for?
I don't know. I hope that she'll lay 3-minute eggs. I don't know how good
I see.
Say, Sam, do you want to hear a silly thing?
I certainly do.
Well, one of my hens was roosting high up, you know.
Uh-huh.
And she dropped an egg on the head of a chicken right under her.
Yes?
Uh-huh. And she hit this chicken right in the head. Tough chicken it was, you know.
Yeah.
Then the hen dropped another egg on her head.
The second egg.
What do you think the chicken said?
What did he say?
The chicken man yelled up, said, if you don't want to get in trouble, you better lay off me. Hey, Graham.
Yes.
Here is the darndest thing you ever heard.
Graham, what is it?
This is the darndest thing you ever heard.
What is it? Tell me.
I'm so wrought up, you know. My stork has gone on a strike.
No.
Yes, sir. The stork said that she will never carry another baby named Paul.
Paul, I can't understand that, Chief.
I don't know. She said she doesn't want to be a pallbearer. That's all I know. But, Graham, my uncle bought a new second-handed car, you know.
What kind is it, Chief?
Well, I don't know. He calls it Baby.
Why is that?
I don't know. It won't go any place without a rattle. I don't know.
Chief, I have a tip I'd like to pass along to all motorists tonight.
What's that, Graham?
If you want to drive a livelier, faster car this spring and summer, stop regularly for Texaco Fire Chief gasoline.
Oh, I didn't. That's all right. I was listening there like a darn fool. I was listening.
You should.
I hate automobiles, Graham.
Oh, you...
I do. They make people silly, I think.
They do?
I think so.
How's that?
My aunt was out driving Sunday. A policeman hollered at her and he said, hey, don't you pay any attention to those red and green lights?
Yeah, what happened?
My aunt said I saw them, but I thought the streets were still decorated from Christmas.
Fire Chief was made for instant pickup, thrilling speed and power.
Yes.
That's the kind of action fire engines, emergency vehicles of all types must have.
Think of that, sir. Oh, I don't say that gasoline isn't powerful.
Yes, it is.
Quite the contrary.
Uh-oh.
Quite the contrary, Graham. I know that powerful gasoline.
Sure is.
Well, I'll show you how powerful it is. This is so silly, I don't even want to say it.
Well, tell me about it. Go on.
Well, the Texas company gave me a present last Saturday of $200.
They did?
Yes, they must have soaked the $200 in Fire Chief gasoline. Because I never saw anything go so fast in all my life. You know,
Texaco pump for a tank full of fire chief. Oh. Fire chief costs no more than ordinary gasoline.
I'll find a way to stop.
But in extra power, extra speed,
yes,
greater economy,
yes,
boy, what a difference.
What's that?
Fire chief gasoline.
What?
I'll write you a letter about it.
You'll get the tickets for mentioning fire chief gasoline on this program.
Yes. Yeah. You should mention our product, whatever it is.
I don't know.
Fire chief gasoline.
Do you mean to say that that's what we're selling?
Get back to work, will you?
Fire chief gasoline?
Yeah.
That's the first time I've known it. I've been here 3 years. Isn't this a chewing gum program?
You can't chew.
Well, I've got nothing against the gasoline. I honestly haven't.
That's good.
But presently, I'll stick to my horse.
Oh, no.
Get Smile Power, the kind of confident, contented countenance that comes from cash, salted away cash, in a Burritt Mutual Savings Bank at the highest legal savings bank interest rate. And you don't need a lot of money to do it. You can save a little. It's the constant, patient, every payday habit of saving that really counts. At the Big B, we love your small deposits. We know they grow for you and for us. Result, we will both have smile power. Plus, we help with our high interest rates paid to you on your savings. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Deposits insured to $20,000 by FDIC.
Our guest tonight is Aldo Gisalbert of New Milford, Connecticut, engineer and producer with NBC during the great and glorious golden age of radio.
Well, of course, in that very same era, and fortunately this is preserved, we have another great show. In fact, the star was on the Golden Age at one time, referring to Snow Village Sketches.
Oh, yes. Well, Snow Village Sketches, of course, all sketches of that type are centered around New England and the dialects of New England. And these characters that are there, the two characters that portrayed the best New England accents. One is superb to this day, and you can hear him on commercials to this day, and that was Parker Fenley.
Oh, yes.
Parker Fenley was, well, he didn't portray New England, Maine. He was Maine in New England.
That's right.
Yeah.
Another very good actor, not a New England character, who was schooled beautifully by Parker Fenley, was Arthur Allen. And he took the part. And these two characters operated a store. Their experiences were really fantastic. They were very, very homey and very, very real. And they were loved by everyone.
Let's bring back some memories then, Ed.
Okay, Dick, this is the first time on Golden Age, an excerpt, a new excerpt from the Snow Village Sketches.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Snow Village Sketches with Arthur Allen and Parker Fenley. When these stories of Snow Village took place, there were still enough veterans of the Civil War in the state of New Hampshire to hold an annual encampment of the GAR at Laconia every summer. It was the big event of Grand Sir Knox's year. He would get out the old blue uniform, dust off the old stories of far-off days and battles long ago, and head for the encampment and the always steadily diminishing number of his old cronies and fellow veterans. But this particular year, it looked as if Grandsir might not make it. He was sick and in bed, and the encampment was only a few days off. Since Grandsir lived alone and was an aged man, and since Snow Village was a kind and neighborly place, the moment the news of Grandsir's illness got round, one of the women of the village would leave her house and go up on the bleak hillside farm where Grandsir held forth alone and nurse him back to his usual cantankerous good health. This time it was Hattie, who had abandoned Dan'l to his own devices, and she was having a rough time of it.
Hattie!
Grant, I'm coming just fast again. Oh, he's worse than Dan'l is when he's sick.
Daddy, I'm cold.
I'm filling the hot water bottle for you, Grandson. Now, please.
Close the window, Harry. Close the window.
Yes, yes.
I want more killers.
You've got everything on your bed except the hook rug.
Well, I'm cold.
Here, put this hot water bottle on your feet.
Oh!
Now, what's the matter?
Well, take it away. Take it away. You're burning me.
Nonsense. Tink too hot. I carried it in here in my bare hand.
It's leaking. My bed's all wet.
Well, that's where you spilled your milk when I give you dinner.
Well, that's
oh,
that's
stop thrashing.
That's all.
I'll take the bottle out.
Now I'm roasting. Take some of them covers off before I'm smothered.
You're in a sweat. Tain't safe to take them off. Now lie still and try to get a mite of sleep.
I went when they called me a fit in the end.
Yes, yes, I know, Grandson.
I fit, and so did General Grant. They made him president. They never made me now that, oh, I don't know when they called
Grandson,
me the cars I went.
Grandson, you don't quiet down. I'll go get somebody else to care for you.
They wouldn't even make me constable like I wanted. I fit just same as General Grant did when they called him
the cars. Oh, please, Grandson. Grandson, now you behave.
I don't care now. I'm too old. I won't ever get up. Nothing to get up for. Go away. I want to be alone. Go on. Get out.
Well, I'm doing the best I can for you, Grandson.
I know you'll be. God bless you. Get out.
Oh, here's somebody. Come in. Now, Grandson, don't carry on anymore.
Oh,
well,
I
yes, you can help it, too.
Here.
I'll go see who tips. Oh, Dan. I'm so glad you come up.
Yeah? Well, how is he?
Dan'l, if I ain't put in an afternoon.
Well, Hattie, you look all wore out.
Oh, Dan'l, he ate the biggest dinner, and his color's better than mine.
Well, then what ails him?
If you ask me, he's just decided to be sick.
Well, what's the matter with the old fool now?
He's all stuffed to pieces because he won't be elected to something or other at the GAR encampment next summer. Is it true he ain't never held no office?
Well, now, let's see. Well, now that you speak of it, no.
Oh, it does seem little enough. It'll make an old man happy.
What are you suggesting?
Couldn't you get him elected or appointed to something?
Him?
I tell you, it'll cure him, Dan'l.
Cure him, maybe. What'll he do to the town?
Ain't there nothing kind of harmless like? Constable.
Irish constable.
Oh, shucks, he'll resign if you ask him to.
He bought a uniform special.
He can lend it to Grandson.
It'll be too big for him.
Dan'l, what about chairman of Old Home Week?
Shucks, we want to have an Old Home Week.
Trustee of the cemetery.
Do you want everybody to turn over in their graves?
Oh, Dan'l, there must be something we can do for an old man. Our only veteran, Dan'l.
Evening, Dan'l.
Well, hello, Hiram.
Why, good evening.
Hattie, how's the old Rip?
Yes, how is he?
Hattie sounds kind of snappy, Dan'l.
Well, I calculate you two able-bodied men can take care of him the rest of the day and tonight, too. I'm sick of running to him.
Hattie.
There's custard in the pantry. His bib's drying back of the stove. And if he wants anything, he'll let you know. Every 10 minutes. Have a good time, boys.
Well, hey, you can't. Oh. Well, neighbor, I just dropped in passing, so give Grant some love. Now go.
Hey, no, you don't. You ain't gonna leave me alone here.
You ain't lonesome. Go in and sit with Grandson. Talk to him.
If I stay, you stay.
I don't know how you figure that out.
We're the selectmen, and it should be our duty to administer to and care for the town poor and aged. You sit down.
Godfrey, there ain't no sense in our both staying here.
Hiram, is there any office we could give him?
I'd like to give him the post office, if I could drop it on him. Why?
Look, he told Hattie he ain't got nothing to look forward to. He thinks the town's neglected him.
Neglected him?
Yeah.
After our spending...
I know. What he means is, well, Hiram, he is a veteran. He ain't never held office, and he's an old man. It's, well, really kind of pitiful.
Pitiful for us if he did.
Ain't there anything constable?
No, sir. Not constable. I wouldn't trust him with a gun. He'd shoot himself right in the badge.
How about the school board?
We're the school board.
Yeah, I know, but we could make him a third member. Luke died, and the office ain't never been filled.
Ain't no pay to it.
No, it's honors that he wants, Hiram. It's honors. We got to do something. Why, he can't do no harm. School's almost over anyway. Till he can set up on the platform at graduation, and we'll print his name in the town report, and by next fall, well, like as not, he'd be dead anyway.
Thank Godfrey Dennell, there may be something in that idea. Better to have Granser as the third member of the board than to have a woman. You know how they're nagging us to put a female on. Yes, Sir Dennell, I think that's just the spot for our veteran. I think this is an inspiration. Come on in, we'll tell him. General! Now, you pay attention to me. I ain't here just to palaver. I'm here on business.
Well, get out, both of you. I want Hattie.
Yeah, well, you ain't got Hattie. You got old man Neville. The shame of you laying here when this town needs you.
Well, they don't. They don't know that I'm alive. I fit, and that's all the good it ever did me.
Shadrach!
What?
How would you like to serve on the school board?
That's all good. What?
There's a vacancy on the board, and we would like to have you fill it.
School board, say!
Now, Granser, don't you get up out of bed and hop up and down.
And me on the school board, say, wait till I tell them that to the encampment. Come on, get out of my way.
Wait, where are you going?
I'm going to get my uniform. School board, yes, sir, say, wait till I tell them that down to the encampment.
I wonder if maybe we hadn't ought to made him constable.
You said he'd shoot himself, Hiram.
I know. That's what I mean.
Well, it's great to hear Parker Fennelly anytime.
You bet.
Aldo Gisalbert, we haven't even really begun to touch on your career. There's so much more, but we don't have any more time, unfortunately, tonight. So I'm going to extend an invitation to you to visit us again soon here on the Golden Age of Radio.
I'll be very, very happy to be here, but you know, you're giving me a swell head. I've got to watch my step.
I think you deserve it. Aldo Gisalbert, our guest tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. And until next time, this is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel and the recordings of Ed Corcoran is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889, and by WTIC. With recording and technical supervision by Bob Sherago, the Golden Age of Radio is edited and produced by Brian Hartnett. This is Al Terzi.
Don't touch that dial. Listen to...
The Kraft Foods Company presents Willard Waterman as the Great Gildersleeve.
Texaco service stations and dealers in all our 48 states present for your entertainment Eddie Duchin and his music. Graham McNamee. And Ed Wynn, the fire chief.